anche con noi. Okay.
Okay, I would like to start by thanking the organizers for this wonderful conference, and especially Günther Ullmann for arranging my trip here. So I'm talking about X-ray imaging, three-dimensional, but not CT, something between what Sarah described at GE cells, traditional X-ray and X-ray CT. This is something in between those modalities. And I worked in Finland at the Instrumentarium Corporation. I'm on leave, postdocing in Gunma University, Japan. And this work has been done by many authors. It's a collaboration between industry and many universities in Finland. This is just briefly about the company. We make dental X-ray machines, mammography machines, and surgical imaging devices. And please note especially that in this mammography device there is an axis here, and you can tilt the head to take images from many, many angles to produce 3D data. And this study was motivated by this idea we wanted to develop an instrumentarium to do 3D imaging with any X-ray source. But the idea just taking only a few images with some not very sturdy machine, maybe just a dentist's regular X-ray head, and combine this information to some clinically useful 3D reconstruction. Obviously, this the whole philosophy of this differs from many other talks we have heard here, which is the very traditional idea of analyzing mathematically how much data we need to reconstruct a function perfectly and then measure that data. Here we think that we should radiate the patient the least possible amount to get enough information to answer some diagnostic questions. So we start from a little bit different viewpoint. But this approach obviously leads to many problems. For instance, first, what are the correct directions? It depends on the diagnostic question. I will come to that later. How to calibrate the directions after taking the images with some light device? Well, that's by using some little metal ball or some other object marker that can be used to calibrate the angles. What is the minimum number of images? That's a pretty difficult question. And the fourth problem, how to make a reconstruction from a very small amount of data, not at all like a CT data. And this is the thing I'll be most talking about today. So the outline will be, I'll show what kind of applications we have in mind. Then I show you how, in what way, in a pretty simple way, I think about X-ray tomography. Briefly about information content of this kind of sparse data, about Bayesian inversion, and then I'll show you some pictures of our reconstructions. So this is meant for situations where the doctor needs to know something 3D about the tissue, but a CT scan is out of the question because of the cost or radiation dose. For instance, for dentists, for implant planning, they want to know how deep they can drill and at what angle they should have the drill to make a hole for some implant. In the removal of teeth, you know, there is a nerve canal going inside the jawbone, and the roots of a tooth might be very close to it. And if you take away this tooth, you might damage the nerves, and then you got a half-paralyzed face and a lawsuit. And very few dentists want that. So you want to know if it's far away or close to the roots. And detection of bone loss between teeth. And in surgical imaging with the C-arm machine, the surgeons want to know when they're screwing something in the knee, a screw into the kneecap, they want to know if it's already penetrated the surface or not. And in mammography, we think it will help the radiologist to see the microcalcifications in 3D and not only in a projection image. This is one of the main examples I've been using. It's a small sensor that dentists put inside the mouth, and it produces images like this with so many pixels, and this is one of the main sources of data for our problems. So the mathematical model, I bet almost all of you surely know it. Please bear with me with my very simple explanation. So let's send a 1,000 photons to three directions, and here we have some aluminum slab that attenuates the photons and another slab. So here we count all the photons with our detector. This ideally, of course, there will be noise. Here I chose this slab exactly at half thickness of this radiation, so only 500 photons will make it. Here 500 will be attenuated here and another half here, so we get 250. And how to get our data? First take a logarithm and then subtract from the empty measurement, and we see that this measurement was some thickness and this was double the thickness, so we can kind of measure how thick material we are imaging. And this is a very simple example of tissue with different attenuation coefficients. This tissue is constant in each square, and we can think of like measuring here like I described in the previous slide, so it kind of counts, sums up these numbers. And so in the direct problem, we know the tissue, we take an X-ray image in the horizontal direction, then in vertical direction, and maybe in some skew direction. And here we have simulated X-ray images of this very simple numerical phantom. And this is the direct problem. And the inverse problem is this one. We don't know what's inside, but we can take X-ray images. And we can solve this as many unknowns as equations. And unfortunately, the thing I'm talking about today almost always leads to some kind of incomplete data that cannot describe the tissue. We have too few equations to determine those unknowns, and this will lead, obviously, to non-uniqueness. And we know that we need some a priori information to distinguish with these guys. All of them produce these same X-ray images. And we might, as for instance, know that the X-rays don't get stronger inside tissue, so we can discard this one. Or we can know that there cannot be so large a number, so we can discard this one. And again, this is something very simple. And in practice, the numbers are different. I will be showing you reconstructions in this situation. We have 42 million unknowns and only 4 million equations. And in mammography, the situation is even worse. So even though the model is simple, the problems are very large scale. And a few words about what kind of information we have. So this would be like CT data. Think of this as X-ray source, and the detector always opposite to the source. So this is kind of the full data. This is the traditional limited angle data. But our situations are usually something like this. We could get only few images, or even few images from limited angle. And a nice work by Todd Quinto and by Raman Kacevic show this is a very simple summary of some of the results. If we measure from here, we can see these parts of boundaries where there is jump between two tissues, and these we cannot see from the data in a stable way. And this kind of crack we can see because there are tangent X-rays, and this one we cannot hope to see. And now I'm going to describe what kind of algorithms we are applying in this kind of situations. So, the measurement M is a linear measurement. This matrix implements the linear equations I showed you with the nine equations and nine unknowns. Of course, we have here maybe several millions of those. X represents the unknown attenuation values, and then we have measurement noise, which is almost Gaussian, not quite, but pretty well Gaussian. Then we can look at Bayes' formula, where we can write down a conditional probability for unknown x on the condition that we measured some m. And this is the Bayes' formula. This is only some normalization constant. And we see that this is proportional to the prior distribution of x times the so-called likelihood distribution. And the likelihood, very simply, under the Gaussian noise, it just measures how far away a given tissue or given values of the voxels attenuation, how far away are they from M. We just take virtual X-ray images here and then subtract and measure the L2 norm. So we get a low probability for tissue that does not give the same X-ray images we got. And the prior distribution, which is the main difficulty in designing these algorithms, will assign a high probability to such tissues that we somehow a priori know that we are imaging. I will come to this later again. This, the design of these is a very delicate issue. And once we have constructed this, and this we know, then we have this probability distribution in a very high dimensional space. Then we want to draw some estimates from these probability distributions, for instance, the maximum a posteriori or mean value estimates. And there are some important features about this methodology. First of all, there is no essential distinction between parallel beam, fan beam, stuff like that. We can take images from whatever directions. We just have to model the measurement really well, as good as possible, to know the source location and the detector location. So we have to be able to model virtual X-ray images. It's nice to be able to build the likelihood according to the measurement device independently from the tissue model. For instance, if we have two different mammography devices, we need two likelihoods, but the breast, if we complete the breast tissue model one time, we can use the same model, even though we change the machine. And this will lead, technically, this approach will lead either to large-scale optimization when we compute the MAP estimate, which is if we have a simple probability distribution in one dimension, it would be, this would be the point that gives the maximum value. Obviously, it's not always unique, but in our situation it will be. Or we can compute, maybe if this distribution is very skew, maybe the mean value will be here, and that's an integration problem, usually dealt with Monte Carlo methods. So in dental radiology and in surgical imaging, by now we have been using this a priori knowledge. First of all, the positivity constraint. We know that the attenuation coefficient is not negative, so we enforce positivity. A simple thing, really, but it helps quite a lot. Then we assume that different tissue types are almost homogeneous inside them, and between the tissue types there are sharp boundaries. And this we chose as a priori knowledge here. We hope to make something more elaborate someday, but now we are using this. And in mathematical terms, the prior distribution will be the product of this guy and this guy. This will only implement the positivity constraint. Each pixel has to be non-negative. And we use the total variation penalty to enforce sharp boundaries. And for optimization technical reasons, we don't use the strict absolute value here. We use the standard trick of rounding it off a little bit so that we can use gradient-based methods. It doesn't lead to as crisp boundaries as we wish, but otherwise we cannot compute anything, so we do this. So the computation of this guy, this number here, means that we have to, meaning this was with the minus sign in the exponent of the exponential, so we can take this and try to minimize this thing, which is actually, it's the same thing than total variation regularization, although we could do something more general, but at this point we don't. So this is equivalent to total variation. And this is really a great dimension. We do currently only 2D problems, a stack of 2D problems, and the dimension in each 2D problem is some 40,000 or something like that, if I remember right. So it's pretty big, so we use only the gradient, no Hessian or stuff like that. And this Barzilai-Borwein is a nice method. It's almost like steepest descent, but the step length is cleverly chosen, so it converges a lot better than steepest descent. Okay, and then let's look at the results. First experiment is one single tooth that my dear friend Helena very friendly donated to Instrumentarium for our tests. I promised to give it back to her, but I'm afraid it's lost, but it's very well its structure is now very public because it's in our publication, so she can look from the journal. So we took 23 projections by turning this apparatus, and we read the angles from here. This is my beautiful handwriting. You see, this is no high precision machine. This is very crude. Here is the Sigma sensor I showed you, and so we have full data, and sometimes, or then we pick only 9 projections, giving only less than 70 degrees limited angle case. Then we compare the full angle and limited angle, and also with unfiltered back projection, which is something that dental radiologists currently discuss in their journals. It's also called tomosynthesis, and it was invented in 1920s. It's a very clever idea. This is our measurement setup. This is our X-ray source, shooting some X-rays here, and yeah, just to give you an idea of our work. So this is the result. We, like I said, we divided the problem into a stack of 2D problems, and here you see the results of the 2D problems. Here is the slice through the crown of the tooth. Here is a little bit low, maybe if it's here, you a little bit higher, you see the pulp chamber, which is radiologically void. Then here are the 3 roots. 2 of them have grown together, and you see the root canals. And here, these 2 roots are really grown very much together, and this is the tip of the 3rd root. This I call the true thing. This is a reconstruction from the full data. This is the back projection, which here we can nicely see the results of Todd Quinto, how these parts of the boundaries are clearly visible in the data, but these boundaries are hopelessly blurred in the back projection process, which is well known, of course. Here is the Bayesian approach, or the total variation approach. Here we don't get either anything very sharp here, but we have better contrast in these singularities that are visible from data. And then we do what the dentists do. They like to take slices in the vertical direction. These are slices horizontally. Then we slice like this. And noting that Quinto's results tell us that if we cut it this way, we will see the right jumps in the image. And so this is the truth. This is what the dentists examine right now. And I think we can enhance the contrast a little bit. And in fact, I was quite surprised that these are pretty close to the real one, even though this is a limited angle case. But it's of course because we take these slices on such directions that we have these singularities from the data. It's related to that, but still, I'm pretty positive about this. We were kind of surprised. Then we made another experiment with our C-arm product. We put this in a horizontal position and put a human knee phantom in between and rotated that around to simulate some situation in the operation room. Of course, this would be rolled under and over a patient and then moved to take images, but this is a bit unrealistic. And we wanted to compare the situation when we take fewer and fewer images, but from full angle. Because we knew that our dear competitor Siemens was marketing a machine like this that takes 180 images and uses filtered back projection, because less images will give crappy reconstructions. We thought we want to lower the dose and give the same image quality, or at least check if this is possible. And this is what we got. So we started to use less and less projections, and with the filtered back projection we see the typical artifacts. Of course, this algorithm is really not designed to deal with this kind of a case, and of course we see these well-known artifacts. With the Bayesian approach, it can capture better the fact that here around the knee is nothing. This should be zero attenuation, which is black. Here in these images, it has some even negative values in these areas. Well, of course, this is not the most important area, of course. So I don't know, I will leave it to radiologists to decide if they like this more than this, but anyway, we can divide the dose of Siemens by 10 and still I would say that this image is good enough for many things that they want to do with this machine. Just check the position of some screw or something. Maybe for that kind of simple task, they need more than one image, but if they can get away with 20 instead of 180, it will be good. Then our the example I like the most, this looks a bit brutal, but this is only a head. It contains a human skull, and it's covered by plastic. This is a standard kind of a phantom that is used in dental radiology. So we took this head and took seven images like this, and we had a metal ball here to calibrate the angles. And this simulates a pretty realistic situation in a dentist's office. Of course, you would have your head upwards, but apart from that, and so we put it inside the mouth and took seven images from 60 degrees, so this is limited angle, and this is also local tomography, because not every place inside the teeth was imaged from all angles. So it's a combination of limited and local tomography, and we compare this with tomosynthesis or unfiltered back projection, and we get this. These slices through the teeth, and you see, for instance, that of this tooth, we see it's two roots here and not the third one, and then we change slides, so here we see the third root and not these two roots anymore, so they are really in different depths, these slices. And of course, this is not the best that can be done with tomosynthesis. People, of course, use some kind of image processing techniques to bring out the contrast, but what I'm showing you is just the raw outcome of the algorithm. Because this can be enhanced, but so can this. So I think this is maybe a more clear starting point for looking at these images. So I like to think about this approach as a new modality between traditional X-ray of only one projection image and CT, which has a very complete 3D information. With this method, we can achieve low radiation dose and answer some clinically important questions sometimes. And it's nice that any X-ray source in the world, and there are many, they become 3D sources with this approach. Of course, there are very difficult problems related to this. The reconstruction problems are mathematically very difficult, and we need to improve our algorithms. And I think even with the best prior information, I think we need to take into account the results of Quinto and others to understand what directions we should choose to see something. For instance, if this is the jaw, if this represents the nerve canal inside the jawbone, and these are the roots, if we take the images from these positions, then this will look exactly the same in each image, and there is no disparity, so we cannot tell if this is far away from the roots or not, so we should maybe take the images from these positions. And I think Bayesian inversion is, in my knowledge, the best approach to start to attack these problems. But we need better a priori models. It's very difficult to put a radiologist's intuition into a form of a mathematical function, but we need to learn how to do it. We need to speed up both optimization methods and Monte Carlo algorithms, and we have to go to the dentist's office and to the operation theater and places where people would need this kind of stuff and learn what we really can do if they want to buy anything like this. And I would like to thank Professor Richard Weber from Wake Forest University. He's been for years advancing the idea of simple 3D X-ray imaging, and lots of the motivation for this project was from him. And in the end, I'll just show you for fun how we look like after measuring after a very tough day in the lab. So, thank you.
Knowing where things are.
Yes.
So, but you didn't say anything about it. So one question is, do you know already that at least you'll be able to reproduce the positions of the X-ray source and the detector.
Yes.
In that case, of course, you only have to calibrate once ahead of time and not directly in line.
Yes.
So that's, can you say something then about how you, from an initial scan, what you're proposing to do for?
Yes, for instance, in the application of the intraoral thing, the patient bites on something holding the detector, so the detector is attached to the patient, and there is a metal ball attached to both, to this rigid combination of patient detector and the ball. And then we can take images wherever we want, and we see from the position of the ball at the image plane roughly where the X-rays came from. This is the main approach we use.
Does the ball ever block the gene important?
Of course, sometimes, yes, and it gives sometimes artifacts in nasty places, yes.
So, the statistics of photon counting are for some material, and you use a Gaussian model for your...
Yes.
And I assume that if there were a low number of counts, you might actually, you might see some difference between these two likelihood models. I wondered if you...
That's right, yes. I have discussed with people about this, and some experts say that if there are more than 10 photons, it starts to be a really good approximation, and we have hundreds of photons in these images, in each pixel.
Okay, any more questions? Yeah.
Could you just comment a little bit about the prior you used, what exactly is the 8 prior information that you assumed in your simulations, and how was that captured in the variation?
Well, yeah, we thought that it's something positive and something piecewise homogeneous with sharp boundaries. And I think we could partially capture this, but not really in the depth direction I would hope for. I would hope for something better here. This is obviously not very sharp boundary moving from here to here. So it's not quite what we want.
Something about your optimization method, so how long does it run in practice?
Well, this ran too long for practice, I think several hours to produce these images. But with some clever tricks, the engineers have been able to drop the times to several minutes or so. And for mammography, they can let it run overnight, because between taking the image and reading them, there is considerable time. Yeah.
Well, let's thank the speaker again. And now the last speaker of the session is David Finch, who will talk some more about thermal perspective.
Just a moment, I was going to go and get a little water.